Hi Ed, it's great to be talking to you again. God, it's been a few years since I've seen you.
No, it's been a little while, hasn't it? But yeah, great to chat.
So, researching on a documentary, what does that role involve?
Yeah, well, it's quite a varied role, I would say, and it's one that really changes throughout a production. So we're sort of part of the editorial team. So as a researcher, I work alongside the assistant producers and the producers, and basically we sort of take the span, I guess, of the whole episode and film that we're making. So it will start in a way that we're trying to work out, you know, we get our what our series is about, get the brief, and then we work out what is going to happen, I guess, in each sort of episode and in each film. So, for example, on Loop, we have to work out what to show in this, you know, one of the early episodes that covers about 2 billion years. So it's a lot of initial research and working out the sort of key beats that we want to tell over that story. And then a lot of learning. And then once we found out what our major points are, we then look at the sort of animal species that we're going to look to tell those points with. So that's the real world natural history sequences that we're filming, also obviously all the paleo work as well, and it's working out what species, what story and what behaviors work really well, and then once we know what we want to film roughly, we then have to work out how to do it. So we speak to a lot of experts, basically. So that's sort of scientists that are researching species or the subject, it's local guides that know where and when to find these species, boat captains or drone operators and camera operators, basically gathering the best team that we can find. And then eventually we will go out onto location, which is obviously the most exciting part, head out on location and film what we want to film. So my job at that point is to basically get the camera person in the best place, the best time, feeling the best, unstressed, happy, safe, and you know, able to perform their best ability, basically. And then after that, we come back and we go through all the footage, log it, rate it. You know, throughout the course, there's huge amounts of emails and calls and, you know, fun creative discussions. But yeah, it's basically trying to, I guess, like I said, form the best team, do the best work. And that involves a lot of people outside the building that we gather together and people that give up their time and help, which is always the most important part.
Researcher doesn't really encapsulate all of that. Yeah, I'm trying to think of a better word, because you think of researcher, all that comes into my head is... the producer will come over to you, says, "Oh, I want to make a scene about Arthroplura. Tell me, find out all of these facts for me," and then they go away. But there's so much more than that.
Yeah, absolutely, and yeah, that's part of it at the start, and that's the sort of the title part, I guess. That we get involved across all of it, which is great and really exciting, and I think that's part of the appeal, is that every day is a little bit different, even in the office work, what you're doing each day is different. And then obviously that contrasts nicely with getting out in the field. So it's a really exciting role.
Okay, so we're talking about episode 2 here. What did you contribute to this episode?
So I guess as part of that, I was part of the team that was involved in all the sort of discussions and the creative part, I suppose. I said, sort of working out those sequences, what's going to happen. You know, it's exciting for natural history because we work out our narrative, but we don't quite know what's going to happen in the field. Whereas the CGI side of things was a lot more, I guess, creative. You know, it's a rare opportunity that we are able to guarantee animals will do what we want them to do, because usually they're not CGI. So a lot of the sort of discussions with that, I got to go out on various different shoots across the series and head out to location. I'll be part of that team there. I identified two different backplate locations, so things like our camera Sarah scene. We were looking for different locations and came across number of different options, but eventually landed in St. Lucia, which was amazing. Unfortunately, I didn't actually manage to head out on that particular Caribbean shoot to a fancy hotel, as it turned out. But I was pretty happy to be involved in finding it. And then also on this episode, particularly, a lot of the sort of edit was run remotely, sort of by Dan and Gisla. And so I was in the room with Rob, the editor, which is a really interesting opportunity. So sort of there, helping Rob find the clips that he would need and our huge library of clips and images, looking for archive of very specific shots that would help tell the story that, you know, we didn't have the time and the money to do a whole shoot for, but yeah, important little shots here and there. So a lot of scrolling the internet for that sort of stuff as well. Yeah.
Okay, so it wasn't, you don't look at this episode and say, oh, I sorted out that rock over there, this shot of that, or I researched what the Anomalocaris flaps were. You were involved like across the whole series, so you'll just say, yeah, I was involved in everything, essentially.
Kind of, yeah, I guess. I mean, I'm particularly focused on episode 2 and episode 6, and yeah, certainly within that, we were, you know, pretty involved in discussions across a lot of the episode, and you know, I think by definition of the role, you know, because people are out on location and filming, it really is a big collaboration. So there were certainly tasks that, yeah, to lead on, and you know, Anomalocaris, like you said, was a good one. You know, juicers would come and ask, how do the flaps on Anomalocaris move? And I usually say, good question. And then we'll go off and find the people that know the answer, basically. So, yeah, working on the details of that sort of stuff, but rarely is any part of the job, I guess, one sole person's work or input, just because it's so collaborative. And, you know, you'll find answers to a question that someone else has asked and thought of. So it's all, a big melting pot of ideas, I guess.
So did you actually get to go out? I mean, I know we missed your lovely Caribbean trip, but yeah. did you get to go out filming and be on set, on scene?
On location.
On location.
Yes, I did. Yeah. So particularly for this episode, I went out to Monterey, California to film the Rainbow Nudibranch sequence, which was amazing. It was obviously, Monterey is hugely iconic place in the world for marine wildlife. And that's something that I'm hugely interested in and passionate about. So I got to go out there, work with a great team, sort of local team, and come up, you know, Hugh Miller, the cameraman that came over from the UK. And yeah, got to go out on location there and film that. I actually never saw a rainbow nudibranch because I was in the water. but again, was sort of, I guess, yeah, field directing that shoot and making sure everyone was working well and happy and able to do their best. But yeah, we used rebreather systems for that, which means that the camera crew can stay underwater. They were doing about 3-hour dives on that one, you know, not very deep, maybe about 10 meters below us, but I was always on the boat above, so out of sight of the nudibranchs, but kept very entertained by all the sea otters that were out there floating around, which were amazing, and sea lions that were there too. And then that one was quite well contrast with the shoot that we did for the extinction event of where so basically a lot of the sea froze essentially due to changing carbon dioxide. And so for that, we wanted to film close-up details of ice forming around different life. And so, which is really cool. But rather than being in sunny California, this was in a very rainy, dark January day or week down in mid Devon. And we were using some pretty testing techniques, but really came up with some really cool results of super cooling water, and then placing a sort of life into it, I suppose. And yeah, I could see in macro detail these shards of ice that formed around them. So that was a cool. We had to do it in a walk-in fridge in the end because of the condensation issues on the glass. So it was a very small fridge, and it was part of an active, I think it was still part of a restaurant sort of larder, essentially. So it was full of cheese and strong smelling refrigerated items. And we had to very carefully move glasses of water that had been cooled to sort of -2, I think we were getting them down to, and then get it into place without setting off the freezing motion that happens once you put something in it, essentially. The water then just instantly freezes. So you have to make sure if you splash it too much, that process will start. And so you have to get it in position, make sure the glass is cleared, get what we need in there, and then capture shots of the ice forming. And that was definitely one of the most unique shoots of the series, and not the most glamorous, but definitely very interesting and fun to do.
Wow, because I watched the whole series once, yeah. And that scene was something that I was just like, wow, how did they film that? Like, you must have been freezing to death in like the Arctic or something with a diver there. Now you're in a fridge in a yes. restaurant. Could you imagine working at that restaurant? You're stressed out of your mind. You're making all of these foods in the kitchen. You've got to go into the fridge, and your mates there are like, oh no, the documentary crew are in there filming ice.
Yeah, exactly. It was interesting. I mean, they were pretty generous, and I think, I mean, a lot of weird looks. They were, it was an interesting behind the scenes view for them to get this event that can only be done in a studio, really. They were good sports, and I think we left in enough time that it didn't annoy them for too long.
So I was going to ask you generally, what kinds of challenges do you encounter in your work? But I guess it would be, is it just completely specific to whatever crazy thing that you're up to? You can never have a set of challenges that are across the board. Everything is unique. Everything is new.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's pretty much the nail on the head. Every shoot or sequence you want to do has its own unique challenges, which sounds cliche, I guess, but is pretty true. So I said for Nunavranchs, it's filming them, you know, underwater and actually quite a busy dive area, and making sure people don't get in the way too much. Coming at, you know, working out how to make ice form, and it all takes a bit of overcoming. And I guess that's part of the job as well, is working out what challenges you're going to face as much as you can in advance. So you come in with as much solutions as you can, but then of course, working with wildlife, things don't show up. Things do show up sometimes, which also was tricky for the paleo side of things. We had, when they were filming in the Caribbean, which I wasn't on, again, I'm not bitter, but they had a lot of fish that would come in, a lot of sort of modern reef fish. And so they actually had to try and shoot around some of this beautiful wildlife that any other natural history shoot in the world would obviously focus on, because they're spectacular and beautiful, but they didn't fit our timeline, so we had to shoot around them as much as possible, which was a pretty unique challenge. And then in terms of sort of the narrative as well, I think it was always looking to be a bit of a challenge for this episode to make sure that it was really interesting and really entertaining. Even though the species haven't got big eyes, they're not the iconic mammals, they're not the lions of the world. To make sure to get some character in there, to get some audience connection with the species was definitely quite a challenge in this one. But I think they did a great job in doing that. And then obviously one of the huge challenges was the pandemic. Trying to film across the world when the world was shut down was really challenging. We had to change our shoots quite a lot, sort of change some of the stories. The Nunavranch, we were going to do a different Nunavranch at first, and then we looked into about 4 locations to do that, all of which we couldn't get into. And then we had to move it to California to do this one quite last minute. So that was a real challenge of just a lot of work, a lot of admin, I guess, and a lot of flexibility to do that, which was a challenge. And, animals are unpredictable. That's always a challenge. And there's the cliche, I guess, in the industry that people often see on behind the scenes, and that is that everything happens on the last day. But part of that is because on the last day, you've got 2 or 3 weeks experience of working with the animal, and you learn how to second guess what they're going to do. You learn their, you know, when they're going to do a behavior or where they're going to do a behavior. And then once that all comes together with the luck, it often is at the end of the shoot.
Looking at the episode now, are there any scenes that you're particularly proud of?
Yeah, I think the Camaraceros sequence is one of my favorite VFX sequences in the series. I think that's partially because it's quite loopy in its nature, in that and that tells a sort of a wider story of the predators of the day back in the time, but also features these background characters that then come to the forefront later down the line. As well as teaching, you know, I said the characters themselves are amazing creatures of the past and doing really interesting activities. But I think that one really benefited from the backdrop it was in. It was such a beautiful, you know, world of colourful sponges in the Caribbean that it really, I think, brought that sequence to life. So I was really quite happy that we managed to find somewhere that we could do that.
So looking at your job in general, it would be a dream come true, I'm sure, for many of our audiences to be a researcher on a documentary. How do you begin working in the field?
Yeah, it's a question you get asked pretty regularly, and you know, it is a real privilege to be doing this. And I grew up in North Devon on my dad's farm. My mum was a vet, and we lived by the sea, and I always just loved animals and wildlife. That led me to a degree in zoology, which I did. And at that point, I certainly didn't know what I wanted to do with it. I just knew that I was interested in wildlife. And so that seemed like the next step. I still didn't know what I wanted to do when I finished it. So I spent a couple of years just sort of, I guess, having some time out, did a working holiday in New Zealand and a ski season and all that sort of thing, just to sort of, you know, have no responsibilities, do what you want to do, have fun, basically. And it was brilliant. And then I came home, thought I wanted to do more. And I think the time I recall deciding that I wanted to get into natural history TV was chatting to one of my sister's friends. And she was telling me about how in Bristol, on Tinder, there's always lots of people that say they work in wildlife TV. And I didn't really realize that. I didn't sort of put two together. There was a hub in the UK. And yeah, it turned out Bristol was it. So I moved to Bristol. Didn't know anything about the industry really, but knew that I wanted to be in Bristol for any opportunity that might come up. So I spent, it probably took me about 18 months from moving to Bristol to getting into the industry.
And that's a lot of swiping on Tinder to find someone get a contact.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, I didn't take that route in the end, but maybe that would have been quicker actually to find the contacts that way. We did, a lot of networking, which isn't a euphemism for Tinder swiping.
Network and chill, yeah.
A lot of network and chill, meeting different people at these events, which I never really enjoyed the networking side of thing and just chatting to people, but sort of worked, and there were some great talks I went to, and then sort of would email people on the back of those and managed to get some work experience in different companies in Bristol. And then with contacts I made from them, one of which was at Silverback, I basically kept sending them story ideas for a series like that I knew was coming into development. They then passed them on someone else because they weren't working on that series. I don't know if I was annoying them too much, but maybe that was another reason as well. But passed them to someone else, kept sending them the stories, and then eventually I got an email from Dan Tapster, the showrunner on Life on Our Planet, and he asked me if I wanted to come in and interview. So I, you know, did a little research on what I knew about the show so far and brought that to him, and he gave me a shot basically, which I'm hugely grateful for, and I've been in the industry since.
It's awesome. Do you need that zoology degree to be a researcher? Can you do it with a different background? Are there other researchers that have, you know, a background other than zoology?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. There's a huge variation of how people end up in the research role and in the industry, I think. And certainly a lot of people do zoology, and that's a good start. But lots of people will do, you know, lots of people will come through the filming route. So whether that's sort of a TV or film degree, or even just, you know, being out there filming, you know, a lot of our work is practical, and someone that has been out filming with wildlife the whole time will have as good, if not better, skills than people that have done, you know, a university degree. So yeah, they're coming at it from that way. Some people come at it from like sort of a wildlife guiding background, particularly if they've got a specific area of expertise that might fit a more specific project. People certainly come on board that way. So yeah, people definitely come at it from all angles, and you definitely don't need to have a university degree. Although it certainly helped the way I came in, but it's definitely not a has to be done route. And I also think that there's a huge amount of benefit in just working sort of, I guess, random jobs in those 18 months. I did quite a lot of temp work, and I definitely didn't enjoy the work. But, you know, when you're working in a factory and bottling, you know, thousands of boxes, there's no better way to learn about working efficiently when you're doing the same thing again and again. Or if you're in a call center and you get timed the second that you start work and the second you leave, you know, your time management becomes pretty good. So I think there's a huge amount of value in just, you know, life experience and life work.
Oh, for sure. I mean, given what you've just said about the daily tasks that you have to do, I mean, it seems like world experience is, mm-hmm. you know, like one of the biggest things. And you're going to pick up skills that are applicable, you know, like across the board, regardless of your background. So, yeah. Yeah,
exactly. And I think just, you know, just having a passion, and particularly if it's wildlife, I think wildlife is probably quite a different world than drama or reality TV, because everyone is a bit of a nature nerd, and, you know, certainly passion does shine through. So I think that will, you know, lead you into, you know, following that passion will gain you experiences that are really useful in this sort of world. So yeah, following passion is a good way to go.
So you've ended up at Silverback Films, you've ended up working on life on our planet. Is that passion there? What is it like working for this company on this series?
Yeah, it's amazing, and it's a real privilege. You know, Silverback is one of the top, if not the top, independent in Bristol creating wildlife television. Certainly up there with the BBC, and the projects that come out of here are, you know, really top end natural history, really exciting. So I certainly feel a real pride and a buzz to be working here, and then working on a project like Life on Our Planet. It's so different to a lot of the natural history out there, you know, and with the CGI and with that narrative of the story of life. I think it's quite different, and yeah, it's gonna be really exciting to see what people think of it when it comes out this week.
Yeah, right. Will you be happy to come back and talk us through your other episode as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to talk about episode 6, and look forward to chatting again.
All right, see you then.
Thanks, Dave.